I'd like to talk more about your recent album, the kind of different influences on it. Some of it is more like what people would perceive as world music, with obviously a dub influence on it, many aspects of it. I can hear that kind of happening in quite a lot of productions that I've heard recently, like the Dub Colossus and stuff like that.
Well, State of Mind is, in our sort of musical evolution, it's just the next logical step. It's nice to diversify and move a step forward, and it was also nice for us. I feel on State of Mind there's a bit more of the electronica come back into our trend, as well as the sort of worldy feel. So yeah, it was nice for us to focus on the instrumental, because a lot of great dub music, it's also has great instrumental things in it, and we'd, you know, we try and refer back to the sort of great dub music of the Jamaican era. But I think it probably just sounds worldy in a way, because the sound palette is slightly more extended than a lot of dub that's been made in the last 10 years. But as you say, lots and lots of people seem to be reaching in different directions, both musically and geographically within their music at the moment. So yes.
I find it quite interesting because, you know, although this has been around for much longer, loads of stuff like, you know, Sons of Arco and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Which had one or two dub tracks on it, but yeah, there's never really a full-on dub album, you know.
Well, you know, for me, the next step was actually from State of Mind to take the same rhythm tracks with the same integral instruments like the brass and the guitars and the bass and stuff. And I've already started it voicing traditional instruments from around the globe. That's actually, it's interesting that you start asking me about that, because that's the next step. There's already one track recorded with traditional Salentino percussion, so from the south of Italy. What else have we got? There's obviously all the strings that's on the album. There's a guy who plays the Irish penny whistle, recording some stuff in Cork for me. There's a hammered dulcimer player from Poland, so, you know, the traditional dulcimer that's all over the world, really. They're looking to play some stuff on a version. There's someone else I can't remember, but that was the natural next step anyway with the project, and that was only because it sort of felt like a good thing to do, musically speaking.
Yeah.
And that's the way we try and keep Zion Train, because it, I don't know, without wanting to make it sound lofty, we try and keep it sort of moving forward and interesting and challenging for us, you know, and everything else follows that. It's not like we try and make a hit, or we try and make music that will go down well in the gigs. In fact, we probably only play 30% or 35% of State of Mind in shows, because actually the nature of our shows doesn't really fit the nature of State of Mind, or vice versa. So really, it's about musical concepts that are the next natural step for us, and just where they lead us, and seeing what that is. And we didn't think, oh, we'll make world music, but between us, we listen to a lot of world music, so we travel a lot, and we hear a lot of world music in different places, so I'm sure that just seeped in. And you can only actually go so far within the tried and trusted either reggae or UK dub or sort of electro dub format. There's only so much you can do musically, so, you know, maybe that's it as well, to sort of just go beyond those restrictions, or those perceived restrictions a little bit. It comes back to something you were talking about before as well, before you switched the mic on, the idea of being able to work remotely. So I can, for example, go to a place, meet a guy, go to Sao Paulo, meet a guy who plays cuíca, and go, I'll send you something next week when I'm in Germany. He can record on it one night, upload it, and I can listen to it the same night and say, well, that bit's good. That, you know, that's a way you can work with experts in indigenous instruments that was not possible before, unless they happen to live close to you or you
were travelling next to them.
But when we travel, you don't necessarily have the time and the space and the right moment to record a bit of music. The moment's very important. You can't just go, we're doing it now. It doesn't always work like that, as you know. So the working remotely, I guess, facilitates a whole sort of global sound in a way. Maybe that's what you're hearing, is more dub projects sound a bit worldy.
Could you talk a little bit about some of the tracks on the album?
What we'd like to do with Zion Train is introduce informational concepts that don't necessarily have anything to do with the actual content of the music, but they do have to do with the sort of intellectual environment in which the album is conceived. Zion Train is a thing that we don't just sit and write a tune. There's like a concept derived, where we would like to show something that we've been feeling to anyone who bothers to listen and who wants to understand. So, State of Mind, it's about the perception of Zion. It's actually a version of the Winston Francis Let's Go to Zion Studio One rhythm. If you listen closely, I'm sure you don't have to listen too closely yourself, but it's a version of that. And it's an intellectual trip. Let's go to Zion, Zion Train. Now, the traditional Rasta thing is, well, I won't want to interpret it, but it's used as heaven. The word Zion is used heaven or a heavenly place. Now, the whole thing of calling that track State of Mind is to infer that the only heaven that exists is created by our state of mind. We make heaven or hell through our state of mind. Therefore, by having a more positive state of mind, we can all live as one in Zion. It's not crass and it's not hippie, it's actual matter of fact. And we all know it and we all feel it. But it's easy to be lazy and it's easy to be selfish because humans are like that. So, you know, people sort of belittle these concepts as being hippie or crass, or they package them up and they call them a church, which, you know, I don't believe in any necessarily set of rules that's given by an organisation is good for anyone. I think we all know what common sense rules are, and those of us who are less fortunate than the others can be helped and taught by those of us who are fortunate enough to understand what's right and wrong. It's dead simple. So the whole concept, state of mind, our state of mind dictates everything about what's around us. And it's the most common sense thing.
It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth. You are a slave, like everyone else. You were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. Prison for your mind.
Come to know about the heart and soul and brain, giving you good vibes time and time again.
Augustus is it's actually a really nice track with a fiddle melody on it. But the title is the name of the most expensive tulip bulb ever traded on the Dutch tulip market, because as you might be aware, the first financial bubble ever in the history of capitalism is in the Dutch tulip market. And basically, to cut a long story short, one bulb of Semper Augustus in the winter of 1627 was worth more in value than the largest house available for sale in Amsterdam, one of the richest cities on the planet at that time. This demonstrates how completely ridiculous capitalism and all forms of speculation are, with invented money that ruins people's lives. It's just, the words are just meant to make someone maybe think, oh, what's that? Why did they call it a tulip? What's special about this tulip? And if someone else has parallel, similar, or even completely different thoughts about that concept, then it leads them into the whole thing of state of mind. Financial bubbles are a state of mind. They're a pretty evil, dark, negative state of mind. The whole thing does loosely tie together.
tunes. Mm-hmm. How did that come about?
Well, it's a big favourite of mine, the original. That album showcased the Aswad album, the Rainbow Culture version that Aswad sing on, or the Brinsley Ford sings for Aswad, is wonderful. But it's quite intense and quite rasta in its delivery. But some of the lines are just so brilliant. The lines he sings for us are so holistic and global. It moved me every time I heard the original. And then we were lucky enough to meet Brinsley for the first time under Mount Fuji, and he was just really nice and really open, and one of those guys who I used to follow Aswad when I was a kid. And to, you know, when you meet the guy who was the star, and he's just a normal bloke, and he's just like, "All right, mate, how are you doing? Great show." Mm-hmm. He's thinking, "Wow, that's Brinsley Ford." And so we stuck up a sort of light friendship through email again, and then I just thought, "Well, this is a gift horse." I know the man who sang those words, and it's a killer song that could be updated, and that's why it's not Rainbow Culture. It's in the Aswad version where it refers to the 12 tribes of Israel and what colours represented them. Brown is the colour of Judah, and etc. etc. It's actually Rainbow Children, like, you know. The we're well beyond the time on this planet where anything should be decided by colour, and we all know it, but it is every single day. For me, I'm an Oxford graduate. People have no idea. They just think there's a black man with dreadlocks, he is X, Y, Z. album is called Arihanta. Arihanta is a concept in Buddhism, I believe several schools of Buddhism, that's about, it translates directly as destroyer of your enemies, destroyer of one's enemies. And it sounds like quite an aggressive, warlike sort of statement. The track is actually designed to be quite peaceful and tranquil. Arihanta, the enemy, is the ego. And that's the whole concept of the destroyer of the enemy in Buddhism. Again, we're not trying to teach people things, we're just trying to show people things that we experience as human beings as well, and we think other people might like to experience. Beyond that, we make no judgment at all. Terms of it having to fit into this little box, isn't that just so you can sell it to someone? Like, you like dubstep, that's dubstep there, like, buy out of that box there. This over there is rock, you don't bother looking at it, you know, that's for all those guys. And this is reggae, Neil will have that box. It's music, and like, my music collection I am is overwhelmingly reggae, 85%, but if I was to choose my top 10 bits of music, I'd say it'd probably be more like 40 or 50% reggae. Because I definitely lean in that direction, but again, that's what universal communication when it's at its best. Jimi Hendrix, you could say rock is amongst the popular genres, the modern genres of music that I like least. Jimi Hendrix is a rock guitarist, but he could play a guitar and speak to my brain through his guitar. And he's saying more or less what you're understanding and what he's understanding. And that's magic. And it doesn't matter whether it's rock or Irish fiddle, it's magic.
Where do you think the magic comes from?
Well, I'd say that the only knowledge I could be completely sure of is it's something that's universal. It's not created by any of us, but it is. It manifests itself through some of us, but potentially with the right state of mind, it could manifest itself equally through any human being. Any one of us could be Jimi Hendrix. Like any one of us could be God. It's about state of mind, time and place. And that's what I think is this magical music of energy. I don't think if you practice your guitar enough, you'll be Jimi Hendrix. I just think, you know, the right childhood, Dave could have been Jimi, or you could have been as good a trumpet player as Dave is.
Yeah, with the method, you mean?
Yeah, with the method, the magic is then accessible to everyone. That's the way I feel it. And where it comes from, I don't know. You know, I have to say, with all honesty, I feel a much greater degree of the magic when there's something elemental about the earth involved in the whole situation in which music is being played. If I play in front of Mount Fuji, or we've had the opportunity to play a full eclipse of the sun, in the Zambian bush, with a huge bush tree growing out of the middle of the stage, a really primeval, powerful situation. That magic feels much stronger there, but am I projecting that? I don't know. I'm an ant in the equation, but I just know the feeling's much bigger there. You play music on the side of a tempestuous sea, the feeling's much bigger than, you know. I'd go so far as to say that in certain environments, the same magic that people in more ancient cultures, cultish, spiritual beliefs are trying to draw upon is the magic we draw on in music. So the same magic that the guy drumming the drum gives to the woman who freaks out and thinks she's being ridden by Ogun, war god of the Yoruba, in voodoo across the whole of the black world, is the same magic, just expressed in a different cultural context. I think it's something primeval and very powerful in our makeup as humans. And there's something about it that the homogenous capitalist world erases. And that's the real, that's where humanity is lost in a way, by buying into that slavery. You know, that's what I think. That's, you know, it's what maybe music has a bit of what voodoo has, but the Vatican lost a very long time ago when they sat down at the Council of Nicaea and wrote a set of rules that were about politics rather than about humanity. And it's on that level for me where the magic of music comes from. But who am I to quantify something like that in absolute terms? It's, all I know is I feel really happy to be involved in it in some way.